You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to focus on one story, and it will be a fairly short show. But the story is something that's in the news today. It should get everyone's attention. And that is the planned ceasefire in the Ukraine starting Sunday at midnight. Now I say why most Americans, it should get their attention. I'm aware that most Americans simply don't follow foreign policy. The one area that may be an exception to that is the attention being drawn to the Middle East and in the Islamic State, mainly because of the videos that they put on YouTube trying to provoke the United States to intervene in their country again. And I covered that last show, but it's listening to other, we're not equipped for people to call in, but I've been listening to a lot of other talk shows, mainly to see what the people calling in are saying. And there seems to be a very, very sharp division. There are others that share my view, and they typically know more about the situation than the people that are calling for intervention, saying enough is enough. We're not going to go back there because this is a religious civil war, and we really don't have skin in the game other than oil. And it would be a big mistake should the United States re-intervene in that country by introducing combat troops. Now, that is the president's position. And a lot of people in Congress don't like that. I understand. You have the neocons. They're still Republicans, and they're still in the Congress, and they're banging the war drums. And I say stop for a minute. I agree that air power alone will never win. It's a failing strategy. You need ground troops to go in there and kill the insurgents. And that means going from block to block, building to building, floor to floor, room to room to clear them out, which means killing a lot of people. That's the only way that really makes sense, and that means a lot of ground troops. It's estimated that the Islamic State has anywhere between 5,000 on the low side to 50,000 on the high side, with the more common number probably about 30,000. So figuring you need 5 to 1, you're talking at least 150,000 combat troops. I'm not talking any support. But the point I was trying to make yesterday, and I'll relate it to the Ukraine situation, because there is an element of commonality here. This is not our battle. Who should be fighting in the Middle East and to stop the Islamic State? It's the countries surrounding Iraq and Syria that have the most to lose as well as the most to gain. And you can literally go around the clock. You have Turkey, that's north of Syria, and Iraq is south of Turkey. You have Jordan, where Syria and Iraq is north of it. And then you have Saudi Arabia to the south, and Egypt further to the west. And those are the countries, together with some of the Arab states, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Oman, that really should be fighting it. Because remember, the Islamic State are Sunnis, and all those countries, the majority in those countries, are Sunni Muslims. We should not have Christian, Jewish, American soldiers going in this country again to be killed and wounded and to spend billions of dollars. It's not our fight in the sense that the countries surrounding it is their fight. They have the most to lose as well as the most to gain. So they should supply the ground troops, the boots on the ground, as well as the air forces. Several of these countries have bought significant amount of American arms, F-15, F-16s. And that's just the half of it. That's just some of the major items. So my point yesterday is not to jump on this bandwagon to reintroduce combat troops. So to a certain extent, I agree with the president. Where I think he makes fundamental errors, and he keeps making them, you don't tell the enemy your timetable. You don't tell your enemy what options you're considering and what you're not considering. The strategy should be that the United States take the lead in developing a joint force of those Sunni nations. As a matter of fact, I don't think the United States should even lead it. But it should more than suggest that it's in the interest of these countries to stop the Islamic State and to meet, come together, and put together a strategy, a plan, and go after the Islamic State. We need a combination of both air power and troops on the ground to stop that, and that's how you stop it. That's the only way you're going to stop the Islamic State, because they will not fight a conventional war. They're fighting what's called an unconventional or an insurgency, where they're trying to overthrow the existing governments in both Syria and Iraq. And the problem is the existing regimes in both Iraq and Syria are Shia, and there are animosities for decades between the Sunni, which are the majority in the Middle East, and the Shia, which are the majority in Iran and Iraq and other parts of the Middle East. But overwhelmingly, the Sunnis are in most of these countries and dominate. And it's up to the Sunnis to stop their co-religionist Islamic statist on the ground. Keep the Iraqi government out of it. Keep the Iranian government out of it. And let the Sunnis fight the Sunnis. And keep the United States and its troops out of it. So that's a strategy. That's a non-interventionist strategy. Will it happen? I'm not saying it's easy, because these nations don't want to get involved. They are already involved. And some of them have already contributed money and arms to, guess who? The Islamic State, even though their governments have denied it. So before we rush back into Iraq, which would be a serious mistake, and the American people won't support it, and the people in the House and the Senate know that, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. You see, I've listened to too many calls. The thrust or the weight of what they're saying is we should go in there and crush them. But the people that have been there and know what's going on say, you're nuts. They don't want us there. They'll take our money and then start killing us. That's what the surge was largely about. We paid off a lot of people, and they became informants to fight Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is now the Islamic State. And we beat them. But that cost money, U.S. taxpayers' money and lives. And it's still costing. That's the price of intervention by the government. It requires more and more and more intervention. Learn from your mistakes. Now, let's go back to Europe. It is very clear to me Russia wants to take back part of the Ukraine. And there's a long history that I'm not going to get into, because I'm not an expert on. But I have provided for our new listeners, as well as our old in terms of my notes. The way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have a photograph of me, but right below it, links to the last 60 to 80 shows, including this one, which I'm maybe optimistic, but I'm trying to post it by 10 o'clock tonight. I have a course that I'm taking that usually doesn't get out to 9, which means I'll really be pushing this to get it out. So it's probably going to be sometime afternoon tomorrow before I actually will post it. So at the very top, you have links to listen to the shows. At the very bottom, you have a complete listing of all my shows. But in between, and this is the point I'm trying to emphasize, I give you a lot of information, both in terms of YouTube videos, maps, photographs, depending on the story, for you to make up your own mind, because I say do your own homework. But I are acutely aware that most people are not familiar with the Ukraine. I'm certainly not an expert on the Ukraine, but I am aware that through history, certain parts of the Ukraine, you have a lot of Russian-speaking people, and I provide you a map of that. And remember, Russia borders on the eastern borders of the Ukraine. It surrounds the Ukraine. Russia has already taken the Crimea back, and the reason is very simple. They need a port. and they want that port and controlling it, and they've taken it. And the people that live there speak predominantly Russian. That doesn't mean they're all Russian. There's a long history from Tsarist Russia through the communist, whether it was under Lenin, Stalin, or Khrushchev, of taking pieces of the Ukraine and incorporating into the former Soviet Union. And now, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, what you have now is Russia taking back bits and pieces of the Ukraine. Now, what you need to understand why the Russians are predominantly on the eastern portion of the country. And it does, the best way to do it, to see this, is to look at a map. And you can see, for example, Kiev City, which is Kiev, is in the middle of the Ukraine. That is not, and there are some Russians there, but that's not where the Russians are. The Russians are primarily in the eastern portion. The western portion, including Kiev, is predominantly non-Russian, and that's what you need to understand. So Russia has mobilized its military along the Ukrainian border and has also provided a lot of support. We're talking tank, artillery, rockets, support, and they're causing mischief. Now, the other key thing you need to understand, and this is critical here, is Russia earns much of its foreign exchange through the sale of either oil or natural gas. And obviously they have been hurt with the price of petroleum going down. I've maintained that the reason why the Saudis did not cut production was to hurt two countries, Russia and Iran. And the reason is very clear. Iran and Russia support the Shias in Syria and Iraq, and Saudi Arabia is Sunni. It's Arab and it's Sunni. So they have no love lost, and really hate, although that is a strong word, both the Iranians and the Russians. And one way to hurt them is to have petroleum, crude oil prices falling. And that's what's happened until fairly recently. So Russia's economy has been hurt, significantly hurt. It's been a success. So the sanctions have been a success. But you have to remember you're dealing with a nuclear power that has a large army. And when their backs push to the wall, they will push back. But it is in the interest of Russia to sell natural gas and oil to not only Western Europe, but whoever has the money to pay for it. It's also the interest of Western Europe, that gets about 25% of its natural gas from Russia, to not have an interruption of the flow of gas, natural gas. And I need to point this out. When I say gas, I'm not talking gasoline. I'm talking natural gas. Sometimes I forget to put the natural in front of it just to make the point. But most of that natural gas flows through the Ukraine. And the Ukraine has been in the rears in paying for that past shipments, to the point where the only way they get any shipments now is when they pay in advance. But the point I'm trying to make is Western Europe in general, including Germany, relies on natural gas from Russia. So Europe does not want a war with Russia. That would hurt Western Europe. Now what's happening is, a little background, the United States, the European Union, and NATO have been courting the Ukraine. And let me say one thing first. The Ukraine economy is a basket case. They have no money, partly because of the conflict with Russia. So, and I'm saying that because it is the interest of the Ukraine, especially the western portion of it, central western to the west, to really integrate with the European Union, as well as become part of NATO. The problem is Russia sees that as a direct threat. They don't want that to happen. And they won't let the eastern portion, Donetsk, Luhansk, and the Crimea in particular, go that route. So they're resisting it. And they're resisting it by putting troops along the border and supporting the separatist rebels. Now, there's an argument. Are these truly rebels, or is it really Russians in disguise? I think it's a little bit of both. It's clear, though, that the heavy armor, tanks, rocket launchers, artillery, they came from one place, Russia. And to fire those weapons, you need Russians. Yeah, over time, you can train people to use them. So this ceasefire, it was a result of a 16-17 hour negotiation between Russia, the Ukraine, Germany, and France, starts Sunday at midnight. You need to keep in mind there was a ceasefire negotiated in the fall that really has broken down. And we've had major clashes, mainly in eastern Ukraine, over the last several months. And that is why there's a push by some in the United States to arm the Ukraine. And the Ukraine has asked for it. Why they're appreciative of the aid, so-called non-lethal aid, blankets, goggles so you can night vision goggles, things like that. What they really need is tanks, artillery, ammunition, and the ability, radars to build, so they have the ability to pinpoint where the tanks are firing from, where the rockets are being launched from. I don't know if Putin has blinked or is bluffing. We'll see. Because the next step is, if this ceasefire doesn't hold, is more intervention by the United States, which means shipping of so-called lethal weapons. Europe clearly does not want war. And I really think it's not in the interest of either Russia or Western Europe to start a war. Both sides need to pull back. Now, what's a little bit different about this ceasefire versus the last one is the both sides have agreed to pull back anywhere between 30 to 50 miles separating the artillery with the hope that that will result in less firing and less interaction. The previous ceasefire was only 9 miles. Now, there are other points in the agreement, but the key thing that to understand, this could have led to a regional war in Europe, if not a World War III. It's that serious. So while the parties definitely have economic interest, you got to keep in mind that Putin, to maintain power, has to have the support of a group of people that currently are supporting him. And the sanctions do work. They hurt their economic interest. So why an aggressive military and foreign policy by Russia has had success in the sense that they've taken over the Crimea and for all practical purposes have taken over Donetsk and Luhansk, it's really not in Russia's interest. They need to sell gas, natural gas, to Europe. It's money, folks. That's why I say always ask the question, what's the national interest here? Always follow the money, and Russia gets its money through exporting oil and natural gas. And that's what you need to understand. What is this about? It's both the supply and demand for energy, in this case natural gas, that goes through a rather long pipeline that goes through the Ukraine. And it's really not in Russia's interest to turn off the gas, and that's what they've done for a number of countries. The gas needs to be turned back on and flow. So I hope this is a case of where Putin has blinked, but it's in his interest to blink. No one wants a shooting war in the Ukraine. The Ukraine would like NATO and the United States to come to its rescue. The problem is the people of Western Europe, Germany, France, don't want to go to war with Russia. So what does the United States do? Actually, at this point, it's wait and see. Hopefully, this ceasefire will hold, and then further negotiations can take place. And there need to be negotiations. What do I ultimately see? I don't know, because here's the problem. There are a lot of Russian and Russian-speaking people in the eastern portion of the Ukraine. And if you're looking at the map, the solid green is where two-thirds of the people are Russian-speaking. And where you see a light green, it's between 41% and 65%. So there are parts of the Ukraine where Russian-speaking people live. That has to be a consideration. However, that does not justify Russia invading another country. And that's what they're doing. That is what they're doing. They're invading another country. They're at war with the Ukraine, and the Ukraine is at war with Russia. Have no doubts about that. The question is, what is NATO going to do about it, or Western Europe is going to do about it, and what is the United States going to do about it? Because if this ceasefire does not hold and lead to other negotiations, there will be an immense push, and it's already happening, to supply lethal weapons to the government of Ukraine. And that's a fact. And I think Putin has woke up to that fact. As much as both sides don't want a war, if he keeps overplaying his hand, that's where this is leading. And Putin has a problem. He might not be around. Because like I said, you have an oligarchy in Russia. And the people that support him want money. They want power, but they also want money. And to the extent that the Russian economy is taking a hit, and it has taken a hit with petroleum prices falling, their back's to the wall. But you're dealing with a nuclear power and a world power, a seriously weakened power. I don't know offhand, I at one time had it in my brain, the population of Russia today. But I do know this, it is declining. They have two problems. They have a declining population and they have widespread alcohol problem. So even though Russia is just the shadow of the former Soviet Union, it's still a very lethal in terms of military power. And I think I speak for everybody. No one wants a World War III to start here. So all parties need to compromise. And I think we have seen some movement. I'm cautiously hopeful that this ceasefire will lead to other and more substantive negotiations to stop this. Because unfortunately, both on the Russian side and on the United States side, they're warmongers. They're beating the drums. I'm not for intervening. I say, what's our national interest here? We don't need Russia's natural gas. We don't need Russia's oil. But our allies, Europe in particular, do, including Poland, Germany, France, and many other countries. I've just named the biggies. Many of them are totally reliant on Russia for its natural gas. And the reason what Russia is doing is building alternative pipelines, one going through Turkey, so that the natural gas does not have to go through the Ukraine. See, in the past, they were relying on Ukraine being allied to them, so they built these pipelines through the Ukraine. And you really need to take a look at the maps. That's what I'm looking at right now to see what the issue is. Most of the violence, and let me say this, there have been you hear in the news, about 5,000 people have been killed in the Ukraine due to this dispute between the Ukrainian government and the separatist rebels largely supported by Russia. So people, innocent people, are being killed. Because when these rockets are shot off, they might be going after a military target in the Ukraine, but hitting villages. And that's what's happening. You have rebels or separatists attacking the Ukrainian government in these areas. In one case, they got a city entirely surrounded. So I'm cautiously hopeful that peace ultimately will be the goal, but it's very much wait and see. I think because of the failure of the last ceasefire, everyone is just going to watch. It's very much wait and see. But you need to follow this. This is a very dangerous situation. And I think the reason we have a ceasefire is the leaders of all these countries know it's simply not in anyone's interest to go to war over this. It isn't. And everyone understands Russia, if it wanted to, could launch its armies and totally defeat the Ukrainian government, the forces of Ukraine. That's understood. And you need to understand that. Because to stop Russia from, if Russia should do that, and I think it would be a total blunder, but people make mistakes all the time, overestimating or overplaying their hand. If Russia to do that, that would probably lead inexorably to a reaction by NATO. And that would require the United States to send divisions in support of our Western NATO allies. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could, and that's what makes this situation so dangerous. So I think we've had some good news. Anytime you negotiate a ceasefire, especially Germany, France, Ukraine, and Russia involved in negotiating that, I think that's a positive step. But I think Putin has woken up to the fact that there is a big push amongst our establishment in this country to supply Ukraine with so-called lethal arms And he doesn't want that. And I really think the Obama administration doesn't want it either. But we're finally reaching that point where it's either stop or we're going to go to war. So you need to pay more attention to this. I have kind of tuned in and out of it, but it really got my attention because I think this is some progress. But the question being asked today, is this ceasefire for real? And that is the question. You can negotiate with someone and agree to terms and conditions, but if they don't deliver, what do you have? Just a piece of paper. So the question is this just a piece of paper? And in the interim, Russia will go forward and launch an attack on the rest of the Ukraine? Who knows? I don't know. I hope Putin understands if he would do that, Russia will pay a serious price, and he will probably be thrown out of office and replaced by somebody else. But we need to be sensitive to that, too. Putin's under a lot of pressure, and he can't overplay his hand, because if he does, he's out. The same token, if he's perceived as dramatically backing down, he's out. So politicians are playing politics. The people that get killed are the ones that are unfortunately get hit by the artillery shells or rockets that explode in their homes, apartments, vehicles. And that's the problem with war. You do have so-called collateral damage where innocent people, men, women, and children get killed. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to wrap up the show, but I wanted to call your attention to what's happening in the Ukraine. And we at least have some progress. And this is, as far as I'm concerned, the news story of today. And if we had call-ins, I'd really solicit the American people's response. But I think most Americans are like me in this regard, know very little about the Ukraine. They've been hearing it on the news, but are really not up to speed. Other than there has been fighting between rebels, separatists, supported by Russia and the Ukrainian government. With that, I'd like to play my favorite song, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.